This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Dave Brown, and this is a podcast version of AMI's Morning Show, now with Dave Brown. Catch the live broadcasts weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m. Eastern on AMI Audio and AMI TV. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI Audio and AMI TV. As we reported to you in the first hour of the show, when Parliament resumes on November the 23rd, all MPs in the precinct of the House of Commons will need to be fully vaccinated to attend. That includes politicians, their aides, contractors, visitors, etc. For his perspective on this and so much more going on in the world of politics, we're joined by veteran political correspondent Craig Oliver. Hey, good morning, Craig.
Hey, good morning, Dave.
So, Craig, we talked about this last week, and we talked about it the week before. I don't think this was necessarily news to anybody, but it officially broke last night. What's your reaction, and how complicated is this going to get for some MPs who don't want to get the jab?
Well, the government clearly had the chance. The Liberal government clearly had the chance to avoid a crisis with the Conservative Party, but it chose not to, and so did the other opposition parties. House of Commons Committee, which meets to run the Commons, met last night. The Speaker came out and concluded that, as you've just said, anyone who wants any access to the parliamentary precinct, any of the government buildings, is going to have to be double vaxxed. Well, that means that Conservative MPs, we don't know how many of them there are, who are refusing to be inoculated, can't sit in the House of Commons. It means that they have been elected, but they will not be allowed to sit in the House of Commons. This has never happened before in my experience. It's very dramatic. Already, some of the Conservative MPs who don't want this are saying some other way has to be found out of this. But basically what it does is it puts the Conservative leader in a very difficult position, because even his own party, his own caucus, have factions within them on this whole issue of vaccination. And that's could split his party wide open if a lot of the MPs are not going to be permitted to come into the House of Commons and take their seats. Whoever heard of that? They've been elected. But the other issue is, how do they get here? They can't get on planes, yeah. Obviously, if you're not fully vaxxed. And you can't even get on a train. So this is a crisis moment for the leader of the Conservative Party, and he's expected to say, we're told, some comments today. The main comment being the Prime Minister is purposely trying to use this issue as a wedge to embarrass the Conservative Party. I think it goes a lot farther than that.
Yeah, Craig, we'll wait to see Aaron O'Toole's response on that, and we know there's already some embattlement inside the party after the election results, so we'll see if this is one more factor that plays into that conversation. Let's jump into the world of provincial politics, where Ontario Premier Doug Ford is refusing to apologize for comments he made about new Canadians at a press event on Monday.
You work your tail off. If you think you're coming to collect the dole and sit around, not going to happen. Go somewhere else. You want to work? Come here. We have so much work, we can't keep up with it.
Under questioning in the Ontario legislature, Ford doubled down on the comments.
All you have to do is come to a Ford Fest. You'll see the support from people around the world that come there. And guess what, Mr. Speaker? I'll tell you how Ford Nation was created. They came to this country. They couldn't get a hold of any NDP Liberal leaders, but they got a hold of the Mayor of Toronto. They got a hold of the Premier.
Craig, it should be noted, we're about 6 months away from provincial election in Ontario. As irresponsible as the comments might have been on Monday, is the Premier simply trying to fire up his base?
Absolutely. You know, sometimes I think the ignorance of the Ontario Premier is profound, but in this case, maybe it is, but I think that many Conservatives who support him feel the way he was speculating about toward immigrants, that they are lazy, that they just want to load up on the kind of payments they can get from the federal government and not do any work. That is not at all, as almost everyone else knows, that is not the history of immigration in Canada. Immigrants want jobs. The first thing they want are jobs. At the moment, we couldn't have a health system that could operate without all of the new immigrants who have filled these jobs. They come here with skills. They're absolutely critical to the economy of Canada these days. He knows that. Everyone knows that. So he's appealing to these right-of-center, hardcore, old conservatives who still want to believe that immigration is damaging to the country.
Craig, let's continue our rapid-fire look across the world of politics by jumping back into federal politics, where Prime Minister Justin Trudeau apologized several times in person on Monday for not attending an event by the Tkumloops Suwetmuk First Nation on the First National Day for Truth and Reconciliation.
I'm sorry I wasn't here on September 30th. It was a mistake, and I understand that it made a very difficult day even harder. You didn't have to invite me back. I know that. Well, thank you for doing so. I'm honored to be with you all in this moment.
Craig, the mistake by the Prime Minister on September 30th certainly warranted an apology, but at what point does he need to stop making these kinds of mistakes?
Well, I think that after a while, you end up apologizing so often that it loses its value, it loses its impact. And I think he's very close to that. And the other question that comes up is, we still don't know, what was he thinking? What was in his mind on this great, important day to First Nations, a day that the Prime Minister created, a day that he promoted the day before, and said how Canadians should do a lot of thinking during this day and consider the whole issue of reconciliation and truth about First Nations. And yet he didn't show up. It's just a tremendous puzzle to many people. This event he held in Kelowna, there was a lot of anger, a lot of really frustrated people who are saying that Trudeau is talking a lot, including all of his apologies, but not doing much. That's the view of many of them.
Speaking of the importance of action, by the time we speak next week, the Prime Minister will have named his new cabinet. And let's take a moment to discuss a couple of the big portfolios, Craig, here. We've spoken extensively about military misconduct and what it's going to take to clean it up inside the Ministry of Defense. How important is it the Prime Minister gets this pick right for Minister of Defense?
Well, I think it's critical. National defense, Canadians may not pay as much attention to it as they should, but it's critical to Canada's image abroad and to the defense of the nation. And I think that Minister Sajjan has been a disaster. He did not know what was going on. When he did find out what was going on, he tried to bury it. And they're still trying to do that in some other aspects. I think the question everyone will have in mind when Trudeau announces his cabinet is whether Sajjan is being replaced as Minister of Defense. I certainly expect he will be, and it will be with shock and dismay, to use that popular word these days, if he doesn't.
We know another major portfolio is going to be the finance ministry, and the current Minister of Finance is going to have a lot on their plate dealing with fiscal policy over the next few years. Krista Freeland was in that role since 2020. Freeland is also the Deputy Prime Minister. Craig, do you imagine she'll continue to hold both roles?
I think there are probably some benefits to that idea, even though it's a killer. I mean, for her to take both of these jobs on is really stressful, broad-based, right across the government. She's involved in every major issue. And then she has to sit down with the people at finance and work out a budget and find reasons to say, why do we have this trillion-dollar deficit we have? Debt, rather. So, you know, the problem is if you separate them, it can come to a lot of conflicts. So since she won't be able to come into conflict with herself and the two jobs she's going to have, my guess is the Prime Minister will keep her there, which will make her certainly the most powerful minister Trudeau has. And not incidentally, will fit her perfectly in a position to win the next leadership if the Prime Minister decides, as many people still think he will, not to stay beyond a year or so.
You read my mind, Craig. It really seems like she's the heir apparent to the role of prime minister, or at least Liberal Party leader, if that's the route they choose to go. And when you hold those high-profile positions, that really gives you an inside track, doesn't it?
It gives you a huge edge. And especially since she seems to handle these jobs so competently. I mean, she was really the lead minister on the whole business of negotiating with Trump and his gang. And a gang is the only word to describe them. And she came out of that looking pretty good.
Yeah, the new free trade deal was certainly something that had her fingerprints all over it. Okay, Craig, let's keep going rapid fire here. We're running a marathon today. Let's jump over to the Green Party, where they've temporarily laid off 10 more staffers amidst budgetary issues within the party. Craig, we've been talking about who might lead the party since Annamie Paul stepped down. But have we been asking the wrong question? Forget who's going to be the leader. Will there be a federal Green Party to lead?
I think there will be for a while, but they've lost their relevance. Their Canadians aren't ponying up the money they need to run a national party. Their financing has been cut in half. They're still at war with the leader. She said she's going to quit. She hasn't quit yet because she's probably going to end up suing them over the cost of all of the lawyers she had to hire to defend herself against her own party.
Unbelievable.
Nobody has ever seen a mess like this anywhere in Canadian politics before. I think she'll be like the old Social Credit Party. Not she, but they will. And they'll gradually just disappear.
Craig, let's jump
in. They still have a couple of MPs in the House of Commons, but that doesn't do much for you.
Yeah. I agree that the national reach and some of the national credibility seems to be washing away with that party, unfortunately. Craig, let's jump into the provinces again. Talk about COVID-19 continuing to rage in Saskatchewan and push their healthcare system to the brink. The province has sent at least half a dozen patients out of province for treatment and to free up some room in their own ICUs. Let's hear from Premier Scott Moe.
The current level of pressure that our ICU staff requires that a few patients be sent out of the province to relieve some of that current pressure that we have. We will also today be asking for additional resources from the federal government staff that can work in our ICU settings.
This feels a bit like history repeating itself. We've seen the same story with their neighbor in Alberta. When are these premiers going to get the message on how to handle the pandemic?
Well, they're getting it. They're getting the message now, although it's too late. And the medical community in Saskatchewan have been fierce in their criticisms of the premier. In particular, they say that he did not, it was less than truthful in the excuses he's come up with for the tragedy that's facing that province now. For instance, saying that, he was only about a week late. He admits to being a week late to bring in the kind of measures that are needed to reduce cases. In fact, the medical community say, and even some officials privately, say it was over a month that he left undone, undealt with, and that has put them in the difficult position they're in now. And one senior medical authority there blames him for loss of life even. This has been very difficult. It sounds like he took his lessons from the premier next door in Alberta, and they were very bad lessons indeed.
Craig, one last topic to get to here. Governor General Mary Simon has taken her first official trip abroad since being appointed. Simon has met with outgoing German Chancellor Angela Merkel and attended the Frankfurt Book Fair. It kind of seems like business getting back to usual for the GG, doesn't it, Craig?
Yeah, with a responsible and appreciated GG. I think she was the perfect one to send to that. She's a literary person herself. This is one of the great fairs of its kind, equal to the big movie events that take place every year somewhere, including Toronto.
The Cannes Film Festival, the Toronto International Film Festival.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
The Frankfurt Book Fair is considered one of the finest.
Yeah. And so I think it was an appropriate choice for her to make her first foray abroad. I think she's done very well there, apparently. And so good on her. It's a good start.
Absolutely. Craig, I think we all need to take a big breath after that one. We ran through the world of politics together. Thank you so much for making some time for us this morning. And we'll talk to you again next week and react to the appointment of the cabinet, because that's going to happen next Tuesday.
We will indeed, Dave.
You've been listening to Now with Dave Brown. Hit the subscribe button on any podcast platform and leave us a rating and a review.